Well, good morning, everybody. Good to see you all. We're going to be starting a new series today on the life of Joseph. So you'll see it up there. And I want to start with a question. Has anybody here ever felt stuck? Okay, good. We got it started. All right. Has anybody felt stuck this week? Let's ask that. Maybe stuck in some area this week. I'm in sales for a security company for my day job, and so I feel stuck a lot, but the most common things I get stuck in, and probably you do too, is stuck in traffic. So what I picture in my mind, there is a zone of the 210 kind of around Sunland that is usually where I'm going. I know I left with an hour and a half to get to this meeting, and then I'm stuck. And when it gets that stuck, the kind of stuck where you're not moving, you're just stuck, and you saw what was, you know, the Google Maps was green, and then it's yellow, and then it's red, and then it's that long red that just goes past Pasadena to like Monrovia and like beyond, and you just go, man, I'm really stuck. And you start picturing in your mind the fact that you have a meeting you're trying to get to, and you realize that they're just going to move on with their day. I'm so stuck, everything's going to pass by. I don't think anybody's going to forget that I exist, but they're going to go on with their day. This meeting's not happening. I've had it before where I've been stuck and I forgot my cell phone charger, my phone was dead. And so you're just stuck and you just kind of drift off in outer space and hopefully they forgive you. But does anybody feel stuck in some area of life like this? There's usually something on our radars. Maybe it's a goal that you've been headed towards, and now you feel sidelined. You're just stuck in that goal. Or maybe you have a dream that you feel like God gave this to you. You've received this dream from God, and you've been going in that direction, but it just seems like it's never going to happen. Or maybe you just have a situation that's just been the same way for so long that you're just like, this is just hopeless. It's never going to be different. And it just haunts you. Does anybody have one of those? What do we do when we find ourselves stuck like this? Just stuck. We're going to be looking at a really awesome story. The breadth of a very awesome story as part of the beginning of this series. But when we're stuck, we may be tempted to get discouraged or to give up. But we really need to pay attention because God may use a season where you feel stuck to do some of his greatest work in your life. Today, we're going to be starting a new series on the life of Joseph, and we're going to be looking at a really crazy story. And we're going to be reading through this whole thing. You'll see the words, some of the parts will have all of it up on the screen, but I'm going to read through it. We're starting in Genesis chapter 37, verse 1, and it says, Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. These are the family records of Jacob. Jacob's also called Israel in the Bible. And now it goes in. At 17 years of age, Joseph tended sheep with his brothers. The young man was working with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives. So these weren't his mom's kids. So these were stepbrothers that he's working with. And he brought a bad report about them to their father. Have you ever done that in your family? How did that go over? Now, Israel loved Joseph more than his other sons because Joseph was a son born to him in his old age, and he made a long-sleeved robe for him. Some translations of the Bible call this a coat of many colors. There's a lot of different ways that they've interpreted this, but we'll just put it this way. He didn't give him the robes that the other brothers got. The other brothers got the kind of robes that you work in. Joseph got a very, very nice robe. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they just hated him. They hated him and could not bring themselves to speak peaceably to him. Can you feel the family drama of Joseph's family here? A mixed family, and it's rough. I have a picture up here of what it might have looked like. Of course, we didn't have pictures of this time. But you can just see he's got the robe. It's beautiful. His dad's looking on him. And what are his brothers doing? They're working hard. They just hate that guy. He's just got the nice robe. He's young, good looking, and they just do not like him. That's where we start. It says this detail is really interesting. They hated him, and they could not bring themselves to speak peaceably to him. So this relationship was not good. And then Joseph had a dream. Joseph had a dream. It says, then Joseph had a dream. When he told his brothers, they hated him even more. Okay, so this is just getting worse. He said to them, listen to this dream that I had. There we were, binding sheaves of grain in the field, and suddenly my sheaf stood up, and your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to my sheaf. Well, what could that mean? They said to him, are you really going to reign over us? Are you really going to rule us? So they hated him even more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream. Oh, this is just getting better. He had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. Look, he said, I had another dream, and this time the sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me. So it's getting better for me. He told his father and brothers, and his father rebuked him. What kind of dream is this that you've had? Am I and your mother and your brothers really going to come and bow down to the ground before you? His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept these matters in his mind. So I have another picture up here, again, cartoonish, but effective nonetheless, of him telling this story to his brothers. You see the sheaves. If you didn't know what sheaves are, they're the bundled grain. And his is standing up, and the others are bowing down to him. Man, I would not like this guy. I can feel it. There's a lot about Joseph that I reflect on, but if I was the brother, I could just really see not liking this guy. But this sets up the family dynamic and really introduces something kind of interesting about this story. A dream. Has anyone here had a dream? We really all have dreams about our life, and I don't know how many messages we usually give on Sunday morning about dreams. But this is a really interesting one. We have a lot of things that we look forward to. We use terms like our dream job or the man or woman of our dreams. You might dream of children. That could be a nightmare too. I don't know. No, I'm just kidding. I really love my kids. So children are a dream. There's dream homes, dream vacations, all these sorts of things, dreams that drive us in our life that we really want to see make happen. I guarantee if we took a poll around here and we wrote out on note cards, there'd be thousands of dreams here, and they really do drive us. Well, Joseph was given a very particular, different kind of dream. He was given a dream from God. This wasn't from his imagination. I have lots of dreams my kids now take dreams to me, and I feel like I'm Joseph trying to interpret these things. It's like, you know, it didn't really mean anything. Clearly, Joseph's dream meant something because everybody reacted to it. Not just that, he got it twice. So something was going on here. This wasn't from his imagination, but it was clearly a very powerful dream because he told his whole family about it. So flashing forward just a little bit, it says, his brothers had gone to pasture their father's flocks at Shechem. Israel, who that's Jacob, his dad, said to Joseph, your brothers, you know, are pasturing the flocks at Shechem. Get ready, I'm sending you to them. And Joseph said, as a good son, I'm ready. Then Israel said to him, go and see how her brothers and flocks are doing, and bring word back to me. So he sent them from the Hebron Valley and sent them to Shechem. So he's sending them to his brothers to get a report of what's going on. This is the favored son going to them. So we scoot forward into verse 18. It says, They saw him in the distance. So the brothers see him at a distance, and before he had reached them, they plotted to kill him. They said to one another, "Oh, look, here comes that dreamer or that dream expert. So now, come on, let's kill him and throw him into one of these pits. We can say that a vicious animal ate him, and then we'll see what becomes of this dream." When Reuben heard this, that's the older brother, he tried to save him from them. He said, "Let's not take his life. Come on, don't shed blood. Throw him into one of these pits in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him," intending to rescue him from them and return him to his fathers. So I have another picture, I think. Sorry, I'm pointing to a screen. Any images that don't come up, that's all my fault. The guys in the back are doing a great job. So this is kind of what the pit would have looked like. This would have been a very common thing for them to walk through the countryside and see. Some translations call this a cistern. So this was an area to collect water, kind of like a reservoir, but not like a well. And this becomes very, very important in verse 23 and 24, which I have up here. It says, "When Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped off Joseph's robe, the long-sleeved robe that he had on. Then they took him and threw him into the pit. The pit was empty, without water." I tell you what, of all the pits in the world, the ones that are empty without water may be the worst ones. I don't know. Ouch. That would hurt, falling into a pit, but especially if it doesn't have water. But the cistern that, or the pit that Joseph was thrown into, is a really good illustration, when you think about it, of a lot of different things that we get stuck in life. When he's sitting, I really thought about this, because the first thing you think about when you think about Joseph going into this pit is climbing out. Like, how can I climb out? Okay, if you're able to climb out, it's really not what the situation Joseph was in. This clearly was a place where he was just stuck. There was no hope. He's going to do the right thing, and he finds himself in a pit. What would that do to you? You're going through life, you're doing the things you're supposed to do, and then you find yourself stuck. You can't get out, you can't move forward. Maybe it's something that you've been really striving towards, and you're like, "Man, I used to have control of my life, but now I'm just stuck." I think we've all experienced that. When I think about these situations, the part that really hits me in the chest is the, I just kind of go, am I going to get forgotten? Like at work, you're working on something, you feel like you're working towards a promotion or something like that, and then it's like you get stuck. Somebody else gets the promotion, somebody else gets the opportunity, and you go, am I just going to be forgotten? This pit is such a good illustration. Joseph was a man with a dream. He was doing what his dad said to do. His brothers throw him in this pit. It's hopeless. He's not going anywhere. He can't get out of the pit. It seems like he's going to get forgotten. And maybe even the suddenness of it all. He knew his brothers didn't like him, but just getting thrown into a pit suddenly, it probably went from, hey, I'm going to get more praise from my father, to what's going to happen? Is anything going to happen? From time to time, we get stuck into these pits. You may be going through a pit right now, and I say things like, God, why? It seemed like you were doing good things, and then all of a sudden, I'm in this pit. Why? Everything was going great. I was headed towards my goals. Why would you allow me to be sidelined like this? Well, for Joseph, it really did not stop. It didn't stop at the pit. It says here, they sat down to eat, that's the brothers, they sat down to eat their meal, and when they looked up, there was a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were carrying aromatic gum, balsam, resin, going down to Egypt. And Judah, so another brother who is going to be really helpful here, says, what do we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come on, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay a hand on him, for he is our brother, our own flesh. Let's sell him. Oh, man. It's awful. So when the Midianite traders passed by, his brothers pulled Joseph out of the pit. So clearly he could not have gotten out of this pit alone. They pull him out of the pit, and they sold him for 20 pieces of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took Joseph to Egypt. When Reuben returned to the pit, that's the older brother, he didn't know that they had done this, and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. He went back to his brothers and said, "The boy is gone. What am I going to do?" Because obviously he had to answer for what was happening to his brother. So they took Joseph's robe, slaughtered a male goat, dipped the robe in blood, and they sent the long-sleeved robe to his brothers, or to his father, and said, "We found this. Examine it. Is it your son's robe or not?" His father recognized it. "It's my son's robe. A vicious animal has devoured him. Joseph has been torn to pieces." When you think about your life and you think about getting stuck and possibly getting forgotten, for a young man, it said at the beginning he was 17. Can you imagine your biggest ally thinks you're dead? What his brothers did was despicable. They hated him and treated him poorly, but to consider killing him was evil, just pure evil. They plotted to not only get rid of Joseph, but set it up so that they would get away with it. That his dad would think, normal thing, an animal ate my son. And if you survived this, how would you possibly feel towards the people who did this? Hold that. That's going to become very important in this series. But meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and the captain of the guard. So Joseph's going along. He lives in Canaan. Now he's living in Egypt. He was the prize son. He wore the special robe. He got really great jobs in the household. And now he's living in Egypt as a slave. But something really interesting happens here that I think it should be a great encouragement to us. In verse 2 of chapter 39, it says, "The Lord was with Joseph." This becomes really important. "The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, serving in the household of an Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made everything he did successful, Joseph found favor with his master and became his personal attendant. Potiphar also put him in charge of his household and placed all that he owned under his authority. From the time that he put him in charge of his household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house because of Joseph. The Lord's blessing was on all that he owned in his house and in his field. He left all that he owned under Joseph's authority. He did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate." So this is awesome. I mean, if you find yourself as a slave, you find yourself completely abandoned, you find yourself completely forgotten, you think that all your dreams are shot, this is a pretty interesting place to be. I think this is where we most of the time live. We look around ourselves at our circumstances and we think to ourselves, could it get any worse? Could this week get any worse? Could this get any harder? God, I thought you loved me. Why is all this stuff going on? If you've decided to make Jesus the boss of your life, you are not alone. The Lord was with Joseph and the Lord is with us. So as we walk through these things, I knew this message was going to be one of my more emotional ones. You may have heard me cry before in front of you guys. But it's emotional because I am a dreamer. And you get to that spot in your life where you walk through enough challenges and things where you can't see moving forward. And I can say with 100% certainty, the Lord was with me. So looking at Joseph's life, he didn't deserve any of this stuff. But the Lord was with him in the place where He shouldn't have been. It almost seems unjust, but the Lord was with him. I'll tell you what, that is the place you want to be. To be in a place that felt like it's all hopeless, but the Lord is with you. Man. So, Joseph meets one injustice after another, because it says in verse 6, now Joseph was a well-built and handsome. Okay, this is for the Bible, this is turning a different direction than I expected. And after some time, his master's wife looked longingly at Joseph, and he said, sleep with me. Okay, wow, didn't see that one coming. So Joseph is in this place. He's doing his master's work. He's doing it well. God's blessing him. All this stuff's happening, and this woman will not leave him alone. He refused. Look, he said to his master's wife, with me here, my master does not concern himself with anything in his house, and he has put all that he owns under my authority. No one in this house is greater than I am. He has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. So how could I do this immense evil? How could I sin against God? He's not gonna sin against God by doing this thing to Potiphar's wife. But she sticks on him, and at one point, they're in the house by themselves. She grabs a hold of his robe. He runs out, which is the right thing to do. You know, the result is very strange, but she now has his robe. And so she's telling everybody, hey, this Hebrew that came to us, he's trying to make a mockery out of us. And he tried to sleep with me, basically. So Potiphar throws him in prison for this. Okay, could this just get any worse? Like, he's doing the right things. You've got to be kidding me. I'm supposed to be up here giving you the message where we do all the right things and it all goes well and it's great. But he finds himself in prison. So he's gone from the pit to being a slave to the prison. But here we see again in verse 21, it says, but the Lord was with Joseph. So just like us, when we're walking through all these pits, the Lord was with Joseph and he extended kindness to him. He granted him favor with the prison warden. The warden put all the prisoners who were in the prison under Joseph's authority, and he was responsible for everything that was done there. Man, how crazy is that? God was with him. So something very peculiar happens starting in the 40th chapter. After this, the king of Egypt's cupbearer and baker had offended their master, the king. So Pharaoh was angry with the two officers, and he threw them into prison. And it actually says specifically, and he put them in the custody in the house of the captain of the guards in the prison where Joseph was confined. So it seems like from the way this is written, they could have gone to a lot of different places. They just happened to end up in Joseph's care. Not sounding like a big coincidence here. The captain of the guards assigned Joseph to them as their personal attendant, and they were in custody for some time. So the king of Egypt's cupbearer and baker, who were confined in the prison, each had a dream. More dreams. Both had a dream the same night. Each dream had its own meaning. When Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they looked distraught. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were in custody with them in his master's house, why do you look so sad? We had dreams, they said to him, but there is no one to interpret them. Then Joseph said to them, don't interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams. So the chief cupbearer and the chief baker shared their dreams with Joseph, and he was able to interpret them. The cupbearer got good news, and the chief baker, not so much. So it says in verse 20, on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he gave a feast for all his servants. He elevated the chief cupbearer, so what Joseph said was going to happen through that dream happened. And the chief baker, was hanged. And it says in verse 23, Joseph had told the guys, hey, I interpreted this. Could you just tell Pharaoh that I can do this? Remember me when you go before Pharaoh. In verse 23, it says, yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. Man, this guy just can't get a break. If it wasn't clear that he was forgotten by now, he was forgotten. What do we do with that? What do we do when it seems like we're just so stuck and forgotten and all hope is lost? And it says, at the end of 2 years, 2 years, preparing for this message, I kept thinking of areas where I felt stuck and just found myself just complaining a lot to God. Like, God, why is this not happening? I thought by this point in my life, I would be at this spot in this area. Why is that not happening? But for Joseph, he was forgotten. 2 years is not an inconsequential amount of time. 2 years is a long time when you feel forgotten. It may feel like 10 when you feel like there's nothing going on. So he had this, Pharaoh had a dream. At the end of 2 years, Pharaoh had a dream. He was standing beside the Nile when 7 healthy-looking, well-fed cows came up from the Nile and began to graze among the reeds. After them, 7 other cows, sickly and thin, came up from the Nile and stood beside those cows along the bank of the Nile. So he goes through and he tells them the whole dream. And the chief, he tells this to all of his servants, and he's just freaking out because he's going, what does all this mean? What does it mean, the dream that I've had? And his chief cupbearer says, today I have remembered my fault. Pharaoh was angry with his servants, and he put me up in the chief baker in the custody of the captain of the guards. And he and I had dreams the same night. Each dream had its own meaning. Now a young Hebrew, a slave of the captain of the guards, was with us. We told him our dreams, and he interpreted our dreams for us, and each had its own interpretation. It turned out just the way he interpreted it to us. I was restored to my position, and the other man was hanged. Then Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and they quickly brought him from the dungeon. He shaved and changed his clothes and went to Pharaoh. So Pharaoh tells him the dream, and Joseph says, Pharaoh's dreams, both of them, mean the same thing. It's just as I told Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. 7 years of great abundance are coming throughout the land of Egypt. After them, 7 years of famine will take place, and all the abundance in the land of Egypt will be forgotten. The famine will devastate the land. The abundance in the land will not be remembered because of the famine that follows it, for the famine will be severe. Since the dream was given to you twice, it means that the matter has been determined by God, and he will carry it out soon. So now let Pharaoh look for a discerning wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. The proposal of how to solve this problem sounded so good to Pharaoh and his servants that he said, can we find anyone like this? A man who has God's spirit in him? So Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has made all this known to you, there is no one as discerning and wise as you are. You will be over my house, and all my people will obey your commands. Only I, the king, will be greater than you. Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I am placing you over all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh removed his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, clothed him with fine linen garments, and placed a gold chain around his neck. So he looks the part. He had Joseph ride in his second chariot, and servant called out before him, make way! I will say, of all the details in this story, all the clothes, the titles, all that stuff, the make way one, that is one that I could get used to. That would be pretty awesome. Of all the luxuries in the world, people yelling make way is pretty awesome. So he placed him over all the land of Egypt. And then in verse 46 it says, Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Joseph left Pharaoh's presence and traveled throughout the land of Egypt. So what was the purpose of all this? It just seems absolutely crazy. We find ourselves stuck all the time. And yet, Joseph's story, when you're standing on the back end of what all that I just read, seems like, yeah, that's awesome. Of course. Sign me up for bad times if I know that it leads me to being number two in Egypt. No pain, no gain. But I think there's some real deep things here that we could that should be really encouraging to us. I actually put those in the handout. But the first one is that God was not absent. This is a powerful, powerful thing. In a pit, God was not absent from Joseph. In slavery, he was not absent from Joseph. When you find yourself in trouble, God is not absent. I think maybe I get so emotional on this too because I am so ashamed of myself sometimes that I would ever forget how good he has been to me. But God was not absent from Joseph. And God isn't absent from us. So whatever you go through this week, God is not absent. The second thing is that God has a larger plan. And this is one where it's like, this is such an understatement. God is not a little more intelligent to us. God works in such detail and such complexity that it's just mind-boggling. The one who made the stars plans our life. So to say that he has a larger plan is just unbelievable. So why did he do this? Why did he do this to Joseph? Genesis 50:20. I think I have that one up here. Maybe I'm going to keep pointing. Sorry. You planned evil against me. So this is what he ends up telling the brothers. You planned evil against me, but God planned it for good, to bring about the present result, the survival of many people. Why did God do this? Is this just a great self-help book? God did this so that, how do you, like the title of the book maybe could be like, how do you become number two in Egypt? You got to go into a pit. Wouldn't that be a great, I think they probably, somebody's written that book, I bet. Was this so that good things would happen for Joseph's family? Yes, that was part of the story. But God was thinking much bigger. God was thinking about all the people not mentioned in this story that would not have any food. Think about that. How long-term is God thinking? 7 years of good stuff. They save it up. They have this plan. And then that's so that 7 years from now, people that don't even know, they need the provisions that only Egypt has, could come to them. Like the whole world at this time was coming to Egypt to get the good stuff. Isn't that crazy? You read the Bible and we only think about Joseph, but like there's so many great people that were just normal people that were helped by Joseph being stuck in a pit. It's crazy. The final thing I put in here was that God was faithful to fill the dream that he had given to Joseph. He was faithful in so many different ways, but maybe somebody here has been given a dream from God. This isn't just like your common dream or maybe a dream of what you'll be with your life, but truly God has given you a dream and said something was going to happen in your life. I'm not going to ask if you were that person, but if God has given you that dream, it will happen. It happened for Joseph. And God was good to Joseph. I really love the two names that he gave to his sons. I put this up here as well. Yeah, there we go. Good job. Joseph named his firstborn son Manasseh and said, God has made me forget all my hardships in my family, or my whole family. And the second son he named Ephraim and said, God has made me fruitful in the land of my afflictions. Those are great names. We're about to have another kid, and so we're thinking of names and stuff. These names are great because they tell a story actually in themselves of what Joseph saw happen during this whole thing. You ask yourself the question, how did Joseph feel after all this? Just nonsense. Felt like just complete nonsense. Well, he was thankful to God because God made him forget all that hardship. All that stuff that you would say, oh, he's going to be scarred for life. God made him forget it. What his family did to him made it forget it. God made him fruitful in the land where he's supposed to be completely unfruitful. How good is that? So what can we do if we find ourselves in a pit? A bad situation where we feel like we don't matter and life is just passing us by. What can we do? One is we can choose to trust God. Just because your circumstances look bad, God is ultimately sovereign. He truly is control of everything. And he uses everything for our good and our purpose if we follow him. The second thing is that we can choose to move forward in faith with our responsibilities. This is something from the example of Joseph that is extremely powerful. Many of us, we have a bad day at work, and we kind of feel like we're going to take some time off. Just, you know, I need some time because things are just so bad. But you look at Joseph, every step, every awful step that he went through, he chose to be faithful. He did what his master said. At Potiphar's house, in the prison, under Pharaoh. He was even doing this for his dad when he got thrown into the pit the first time. That's something that God really, really honors. God uses all those things because it really takes faith to do it. So to wrap up this morning, I got a little emotional. I'll put it this way. This story is so compelling to me because I definitely am a dreamer. I'm unashamedly so. I may sometimes feel weird in that, but I've always been somebody that has been more future-oriented, looking to the future. So God has definitely wired me for that. I definitely resonate with that with Joseph. But one of the things that I really wrestled with during this story is because this isn't like, I don't know if anybody likes Christian movies where it's like, I keep wanting to say Remember the Titans. That's not it. What am I thinking of? The football movie. Facing the Giants. I was close. Those movies are great. If you know, they can be good. But the thing that is kind of frustrating about some Christian movies is it's a happy ending for happy ending's sake, it feels like. And a Christian movie wraps up 2 hours, it goes from bad situation to happy ending, Jesus gets the honor, and that's great. And it's not wrong. God, ultimately, we know that God works things out for good, and there is a happy ending. But you look at Joseph's life, this was not a 2-hour movie. This was 13 years. 13 years. How long is your journey? I always have to trust God just a little bit longer than I want to. And that's really hard when you're stuck in a pit and it feels like you're not making any forward progress. I still have to trust God. And the other thing that I realized I kept coming back to, I really wrestle with, is I am constantly trying to eliminate faith from the equation. When we think about what Joseph went through, when you're stuck in a pit, you can't climb out. There's no way you can reason your way out of the pit. You're stuck. And the only way that you can do anything is to trust that God's going to deliver you. And that takes faith. Faith is not sight. I really struggle with this sometimes because I would love to always be able to see what the next thing is to do. But there comes a time every single time that I know what God says, and I have to just step out and trust him. If I could eliminate that, man, I would try. But God, over and over, puts me in position where I just have to trust him. And the good thing is that over and over that's made my faith grow in trusting him. So I don't know what the future holds. I know that I have a lot of dreams. Over and over, I've seen some dreams come through that I felt like were just never going to happen. For me personally, getting married felt like it just was not going to happen. I knew I was looking for someone who walked with God and was on mission with him. When I met my wife, it shocked me because she was what I had been looking for, but it felt like it was not going to happen. So that's great. And I would love to say, because of that, I now have so much faith that anything that I come across in the future is easy, but it's not the truth. The truth is, I have to just keep trusting God, and I constantly come up with a longer and longer list of things that I go, if God would just do this, then I'm going to be fine. And it's not true. The truth is, the best place for me is where I have to completely trust God. That's really the beautiful thing about where God brought Joseph. He had to completely trust God. So as his brothers and sisters, looking back thousands of years later, we can look to Joseph and say, man, God delivered on the dream that he gave to Joseph. He could be trusted. God gave a dream, and he could be trusted. God was with Joseph. God didn't abandon him. And ultimately, God did good for Joseph and his family and all the people around him. That's what we really need to take from this. And as a church, we need each other to constantly be reminding each other that God is going to keep coming through. He will not give up on us. So throughout this series, you're going to see a lot of faith that Joseph had to show. But I think this is a good kickoff. God can be trusted. So let's pray. Dear God, we thank you so much for your word. We thank you that you are faithful and you take care of us, even when it feels completely hopeless, when it feels like we're in a complete pit. You have never forgotten us. You've never given up on us. You love us and you will always do good to us. We thank you for that. And we ask that you would help grow our faith as we walk with you. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.